Hello and welcome back to Chips of Chorlton. I'm Neil Wright. This is episode 22 and we have gone across the M62 eastwards.
Eastwards. Is it east?
It is east.
I always think everywhere's south.
Oh God, I know
that it riles you up getting directions wrong.
I know, we do that. And we're at the Belgrave in Leeds. Yeah, fantastic place. I'm joined by Duncan.
Hi.
I'm joined by Andy.
Hello.
And super guest, Katie Harkin from seminal band Everyone. You've been in every band.
Basically. All the seminal bands. Yeah.
How are you, Katie? Okay.
I'm great. Welcome to the right side of the Pennines.
Ooh. Right.
And that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, good burn.
Thank you.
Good
that's burn. Great. Yeah. You were here last night, weren't you, Katie?
I was here last night. That's not why you had to come here.
No, you couldn't leave. It sounds like you've stayed.
Yeah.
Since
just,
what was going down?
It was a festival called This Must Be The Place, and it was between this venue and then Headrow House, which is a mere stagger away.
Oh yeah.
And I started off the day watching Magic Mountain featuring both Nesta and Lindsay from Skylarkin and Tom from Pulled Apart by Horses. So there's sort of a musical chairs of Leeds bands as ever. And then over here to see Tall Saint, and then to see Self-Esteem. There's probably someone else that I watched, and that's what all days are about, isn't it?
Just kind of
blundering around. And yeah, there's a rooftop at both of these venues.
Nice.
So
nice.
It was a little confusing to see a lot of sort of tight white jeans walking in to the front door and thinking, you're in the right place, mate. And it's like, oh no, they're going straight up to the
sunshine. I thought you meant more like just like the indie 2006 look.
Oh wow.
Yeah, kind of like your Klaxons era. That's what I thought you meant then.
I did spend a long time with my friend Amy when we were doing our GCSEs, I think, because her boyfriend wanted a white belt, had seen a picture of the Strokes and wanted a white belt. And you know, the Mosher shops in Leeds weren't, I think
Peter Broadhead might have done that
as well.
Isn't
that what happened to Dutch
uncles
when you died?
Yeah, Peter invested in some.
Age,
yeah, Peter invested in some skin tight white jeans. I remember this well. It happened on tour that they were destroyed by some boiling, hot KFC gravy.
On the way.
Which is probably why he's got his condition about you don't start eating until you're on the motorway.
He does have quite a complex about that.
He does. Like, he refuses to eat any food until you're already on the M roads.
We can imagine like anyone.
You wait. He could be waiting like 15 minutes.
On the straight and narrow.
Okay.
But I think anyone who's been in one of the sort of standard touring splitter buses can imagine just seeing a gravy go from one end of the table right
in.
Boiling hot. And I think he just he was in pain.
I think he just looked up and went, great.
That's brilliant.
So that was Dutch Uncle's foray into fashion. Beginning and end, I believe.
So when was the last time that we were at the Belgrave? Was it when you played actually? Out of touch.
Yes, I think it was with our Out of Touch in the Wild Light Orchestra.
It's the Some Strings Attached tour.
Yes. Yeah. There was 9 of us up on that stage. I remember the sound check being awful, but the gig being really good.
Yeah. I remember that tour being up and down.
Yeah, we played Leicester on that tour, didn't we? To no one. And oh God, have we talked about that yet?
We've all got a Leicester to no one story.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I've got at least
we'll say
two.
That the
yeah.
Yeah. I think actually we've got two.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know what, Katie? Go in. What's your Leicester to Nowhere story?
Well, it was that our poor sound engineer was having a horrible migraine, which meant he was lying in the van trying not to be sick. And then there was no one coming to the show. And we were like, well, you know, he's in physical pain for the sake of this. Like, maybe at least we'll get a decent curry out of it. And somehow managed to find the one terrible curry in the Midlands that was like, just like frozen veg, you know, like hospital veg, cubes of carrot and peas. Miserable, absolutely miserable night.
Yeah. That's not dissimilar from the Leicester story.
That's not dissimilar from our one, yeah. That string tour, essentially, it was always going to be quite a small tour because, you know, you need to find venues that have got the money to actually go, yeah, here's enough money for you, a band of six with a very old, you know, we have a very old-fashioned model, you know, like we've actually got the separate driver and the sound engineer and the van, of course. So not only for that, but then
it just
for
sounds
also,
better.
But then also for three session musicians as well. And it was like, right, okay, well, very few places are going to be able to pay for this. Leicester Academy somehow came up with the goods. It was Academy 2, and I don't think we'd ever played anything more than The Musician. It was like a tiny place there. And even then, I think we played to about 20 people. So we ended up playing to about 40 people. maybe.
That's all right.
In a 700 cap room. But that wasn't the embarrassing part. Weirdly enough, the embarrassing part was that our shared dressing room was kind of like an old council, like meetings room, wasn't it? I just remember it was one of those when you walk into a dressing room, sometimes people expect it to be like, you know, sofas and maybe somewhere to lie down. This is actually just a conference room, just one classic big oval desk and 20 chairs around it. Which is not a vibe, but there it is. And I remember because they'd obviously spent so much money on getting us there and they knew that they had not made any of it back in tickets, that our rider, our hot meal was essentially three microwavable lasagnas just left on hot plates to warm up throughout the day. Because it wasn't even a microwave. And it was
just
so
melting,
bad.
The plastic just dripping.
Well, yeah, it was so bad that our tour manager just like, no, that's it, fuck it, I'm taking you boys out, I'm treating you. we went down to Subway. Got a Subway for everyone, apologised profusely to the string players. I'm so sorry.
Just
this
got like
never
a 6 foot long.
It's like, there's going to be serious words to the promoter after this.
Wow.
Do you remember that?
But no, hold on. So I think at the end, it was after the gig when he finally showed up, and I think Musco shouted at him, like, how dare you try and service this muck and all this lot. And the guy just went, well, you seem to enjoy it. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, it's been eaten. Like, he's been eating it. Outfit were eating it whilst we were on stage. The support band had just guzzled down all this grey anemic lasagna. It was
horrible. When you're too big, there's always somebody on the way up that's hungry. You know?
So you're back in the UK quite fleetingly, aren't you?
Quite fleetingly, yeah. Yeah. But, it's a good time of year to be back. There's lots of bands in town. There's a festival on the go. Multiple festivals on the go.
Mm. Yeah. So what have you got on over in the States at the moment? What you're working on?
The next major thing that I'll be doing is rejoining Sleater-Kinney for the forthcoming touring for their new album.
Yeah.
Extensive tour. Is it all over the world, UK, Europe, etc.?
So far we've got announced US, Canada and Europe. So 7 weeks straight in the States and a couple of Canadian shows, which might be the longest American tour I've done. It's not the longest tour I've done, but of one place perhaps. And then, UK and Europe, February, I think. There's definitely a Manchester show. It's no Leeds show again, by the way. But I'm trying.
That's
the second time.
Do you ever kind of get to stick that in there?
I know. I'll just change the postcode on the bus driver's GPS and turn up here. Be like, well, I've got to do it now. Manchester's so far away, we couldn't possibly make it in time for this show.
So the journey over here was hell.
Yeah, it
was 50 minutes in an air-conditioned car. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd last on a 7 week tour, Duncan.
I wouldn't.
Flatly refuse to do it.
The number of times as a young band from Leeds, I feel like, now there's venues like this, but the number of times that we sort of had to go to Manchester, whether it was to see gigs at all, when I was younger, that was where I basically had to go to see music. Before we had the sort of medium to large size venues in Leeds that we have now. In terms of arena shows that a young person could get into rather than going to, a bar. Yeah. And then loads of the sort of festivals for younger bands were all in Manchester. And I still pass one of the petrol stations and remember us putting in £6 to get home and the guy at the till saying, "You're going to Leeds." I was like, "How do you know?" And he went, "£6." So that'll about do it,
Keeping on the theme of Leeds, this weekend is Leeds Festival.
Leeds is Leeds.
You've both played Leeds, gone to Leeds as a punter. What are your experiences of Leeds Festival as both? And what do you think of it now?
Well, we were talking about this on the way over, and it was this, because I've been so many times as a punter, it felt like the most sort of prestigious we've arrived thing to play it.
Absolutely.
Spine tingling.
Yeah, I mean, even Glasgow, which is obviously amazing, but Leeds was something about Leeds that, because we went so often in our formative years,
twice.
Just felt I went 4 years in a row.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
We're probably in a pit somewhere together.
Probably.
Moshing our little brains out.
How old are you the first time you went?
13 or 14. it was, yeah, I think I was just 14. Yeah, I was 14 when I first went. And yeah, I think basically every year until my mid-20s after that, I went in some way. The first time that I played, it was actually 2005, before Skylarkin had maybe even actually played a proper gig. We played the Nokia Rock Up and Play stage.
Oh, I remember that.
With all the inflatables.
Yeah, which was, we did it, like, I'd been walking past it the whole weekend. I was like teenager, was like really nervous about doing it. And it was on the last day that I'd like finally worked up the bottle to do it. And I was like, oh, Nesta Lindsay, like, let's do it. Let's rock up and play. And we did. And it, obviously it was like really shit gear that they had for this stage that had been abused all weekend. So we managed about like 1.5 songs. I've got a picture of me holding a microphone because the guitar had like fallen apart and Nesta had pushed the drum kit over or whatever. But yeah. And then I think we did Future Sound, which was like a sort of BOTB, Battle of the Bands competition for Leeds bands to play at the festival, in which hilariously we beat a band called Wild Beasts. It's just ridiculous. And also because they were our mates, because we were two bands in Leeds at the time that people were like, oh, well, I don't, it's a bit weird, but people seem to like it. So they put us on the same bill constantly. Yeah. And I remember, you know, some of my friends that had come to see us, because it was one of those how many people do you get through the door kind of things.
Yeah.
Some of our friends that had come to see us, and I was like, oh, stick around for the next band. And they're just like walking out, just like... you know, not getting it. But
I hope you whenever you bump into Hayden or the rest of them, I do hope you lord it over them every time.
Yeah.
Like, that is bragging rights.
I mean, that's
like,
why they had to take me on tour with them, because it was just contractually obliged. Like, you know,
if we bring it down to our level, she can't keep going on about it.
No, absolutely not. And then I think we ended up on Dance the Radio, the Leeds label that was had a stage there. So there's always been like some version of like mere mortals being able to play at Leeds Fest, which again was like, I don't know if I've ever officially played on one of the, like, you know, own brand stages. I've played your like Leeds Fest Basics stage. But I don't think I've been on the, you know, the finest main stage or Radio One or anything. But yeah, there's always been like a, oh, maybe I could actually do that-ness of Leeds Fest. Like, I just lived for it when I was a teenager. And, to be quite honest, I think it's prepared me for life as a touring musician, because like festivals are now something that's becoming bigger in America, but like festival culture was always a bigger thing here. Like, having Leeds Fest is like my norm for for kind of what it's like to be at a music festival. You know, whenever we turn up somewhere and they're like, oh, it's a bit muddy, and I'm like, mud, you don't know mud. Or like, it's a bit rowdy, and I'm like, rowdy is a tree on fire.
are you waking up to the sounds of aerosol cans exploding?
Exactly.
Well, I remember the last year I went, there was all the fires and all the shit going off. And it was really impressive because it had rained torrentially for about half an hour before. I was like, how have they found kindling around here? Like, how has this happened?
It was
horrible. It was the Muse one. It was when Muse headlined on the Sunday. Arctic Monkeys before it, and then Muse.
That could be any year. You're naming any year in the last 15 years.
Was that this year?
Any year, yeah.
Well, no, but it was really dramatic because Muse were, you know, doing their thing, oh, here's the album track, blah blah blah. It's the bloody rock opera, and then all of a sudden, is it called Get Born?
Are you asking me about a Muse track?
Newborn. Get Born's Jet.
Yeah, that's
sorry.
Is that Get Free?
Let's Get Free.
Oh no, that is
Get Free. Who's that?
Oh, that's the Vines.
That's the Vines.
I love
this.
Whatever this game is, I'm loving it. It's fantastic.
So what about when you were playing it? When was the first time you played?
Well, we then played it. It took... I remember saying after that experience, it's like, not coming here until we play it.
Ooh.
It's like, yeah, hot take. Mic drop.
It's a real, yeah. It's like a Johnny Burrell quote.
Mic drop. Aerosol spray can exploding somewhere.
Pushing over at Portaleigh.
Yeah, I think it was about 7 years later.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think it was. Or maybe 6 years later. It was about 2011 or 2012? We were trying to remember, because it was when It was the weekend when United beat Arsenal
8-2.
We just remember that.
Yeah. Not a football podcast.
What a different way to live your life. Like, really. It's interesting.
Oh no, but it was laced. It was riddled with technical errors and vomiting.
Yes, it was.
Wasn't
yeah.
it?
The football game? Your set.
Yeah, our set was.
Well, I mean, we just had guitar
ramps break on stage whilst we played the Carling stage at Leeds, which was massive. Like, I remember being so excited for that. That was the one stage you wanted to play. It's like, I can't believe we're playing the same stage that Scissors for Lefty played to 10 people. I remember watching Field Music. We were the only people watching them.
Yeah, I remember
that.
Then we got
out there. I saw Sleater-Kinney on that stage. Oh, really? I'm pretty sure it was that stage. Yeah, with like maybe one mate from school. I mean, there were other people there, but I mean, yeah, I'd seen them like earlier that year on my own at the cockpit because no one would come with me. But yeah, it's and just like whenever there'd be Leeds bands that would win one of these competitions of various kinds, just like going and then like recognizing other people from like Leeds gigs down at the front or like, yeah. just like having that connection to it. It's a massive deal.
Yeah,
it
is. Definitely. Yeah. And basically
the guitar ramps broke. Yeah. So then I started doing an impromptu rendition of one of our 5-minute piano pieces.
Lovely.
Which I was just like, everyone just follow my lead. Like, this is not Band on the Wall. Yeah. It's fucking Carling stage.
That's what everyone comes to Leeds Festival for, a piano recital.
In 7/8.
Yeah.
We ended up using Pete Doherty's amp in the end because it was just on stage and, well, you're not going to go ask Viva Brother.
No. Well, he probably just
so
nicked
much
it off
indie
them,
landfill
yeah.
going on. It's like indie landfill stage, big time.
Wow. Is this a support group? Because it's helping.
Yeah. You should do that.
Wow.
And then that was the Friday, and then we were playing Reading on the Sunday.
Yeah.
But it was the Strokes and Pulp playing on the Saturday at Reading. Oh, so we were like, let's go down a day early, watch that, because I'll be fucking mint.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
The Strokes were terrible.
Pulp were great. Strokes came on, and they visibly looked like they hated each other.
What era was this? 2011, 12.
I think it was when Angles had just come out.
I was playing with Wild Beast, and we did Jules Holland, and it was the same episode as the Strokes. and they didn't all sound check together, and when we actually played, all the Beast Boys were absolutely screwing because they sat all of our girlfriends next to the Strokes. Like, I was looking for my girlfriend in the crowd and they were all just like there by the Strokes, like, oh, come on. All the hot girls over by the Strokes, like, that's the last I'll ever see of them. Yeah.
Yeah, like Fabrizio Moretti needs boxing off.
I know. Any human could never, could resist him. But but you just want to go and listen to that first record and some of the second record.
And some of the third.
I'll have to revisit the third one.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I listened to the whole back catalogue recently. Sorry, but you were saying.
Digress.
Oh, no. Was I giving you a look?
No, not at all.
I assure you, it's just the hangover. Sorry. So they were playing and we'd obviously parked up and decided to just get on it all day.
Yeah.
I remember I nearly got kicked out the festival by security in the VIP bar.
VIP,
for throwing pints around.
Amazing.
Because I was having an argument with someone, started acting like a... It's hard to explain it. It was an out of character moment. But I was like, shit, what am I doing? I'm actually being a hooligan.
There's something that happens at Leeds Fest. Like, even in the quote unquote VIP bar, I remember seeing a guy just having a piss up the bar. Like it was one of the hoardings that guys also just piss up for no apparent reason. Just pissing up the VIP bar, and I was like, this is it, I've made it. Yeah. Do you watch any like survival shows? Like your Alaskan survival shows?
I love Ireland.
Oh. I love when I'm on tour, I like watching like people that are in actual peril rather than me just being like, oh, I slept slightly less than I'd like to and I can't find coconut water or whatever I'm being moody about. I love like the Last Alaskans and Alone and all that stuff. And like, maybe it's because of the skills that I hone setting fire to damp Carling cups at Leeds Fest. It's like just taking me back to my youth. Because as you say, like all these wonderful Yorkshire kids, like managing to start a fire during a muse set after a deluge. Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Were they just of an age where they could remember their like orienteering classes at schools? Like,
do you remember the bus that would take you to the festival site as well?
Oh.
From like Park, it was like just like an old double-decker school bus.
I tell you what, this is like, the right podcast for me to be on this weekend because I have got another horrible Leeds Fest story about the bus.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Do tell.
If you don't mind me stealing the mic again.
Absolutely not.
hear you. So one time that my girlfriend and I were going to Leeds Fest, we decided to take the bus in from Leeds City Centre because we were, you know, too old and mature to ask my mum to drop us off. Big mistake, really big mistake. It was one of the weekends that Eminem was headlining, so again, ooh, could be any year. Yeah. Like, I feel like that happened every other year at some point. Most recently, so maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, getting on the bus and there was this guy that was dressed as Eminem. And they were in the front and he just decided to have a piss on the floor of the top deck of the bus at the front seat. God. And his mate was really annoyed at him only because he'd pissed on his cans. And I remember distinctly that he was drinking amaretto from the bottle. So now I just have the sense memory of the smell of amaretto. Just a guy pissing on the floor of a bus as it like dripping down the stairs. And I was like, we're not even at Leeds Fest yet. And something like visceral is happened. But it's a great festival. I hope to play again one day. Really do. Yeah.
Yeah. We had, the second time we did or didn't do it.
Remember, we were literally the only rained off act.
Yeah, we got booked to play the Dance to the Radio stage.
Yeah, the Thursday night thing.
The Thursday night. And it, well, everyone else played.
It rained between, because we were supposed to be headlining it.
Wow.
Between Hookworms finishing their set and then us going on.
Yeah.
It had rained so much in the space of half an hour, 40 minutes, that the motors had been drowned. Like, basically, they had to turn them off.
Wow. Yeah.
Otherwise, it was going to create like a fire or something.
I think I was there.
Yeah.
Probably would have been
we were the only rained off act of that weekend.
It was quite...
Yeah. They're like, yeah, go so back to Manchester. Yeah, nice one.
You all know Thursday's not a real day. Yeah.
But tell the Manchester bands that there's a festival on Thursday.
We know it's going to rain then.
But the first time, didn't finish.
Sorry,
so I nearly get kicked out. Rob drinks too much on the Saturday. Remember there was that steward that came up like, make sure your next drink's water, yeah?
Oh, wow.
Like, that kind of happens.
Getting benched at Leeds Fest, that's hard to do.
Yeah, so basically, I nearly get kicked out. Rob drinks too much. And then basically the next morning, we end up having shepherd's pie for breakfast because it's the only thing we can get at the catering
tent. In Yorkshire.
I think our stage time must have been moved early on the... Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same set time. Mm. I think we must have played earlier at Reading than we did at Leeds. Because I remember, we had shepherd's pie for breakfast. We ate it with Hugh Stevens. I don't know why he was joining us for shepherd's pie for breakfast. Might as well have Hugh Stevens.
Yeah, you probably had to go and start repping the stage at whatever clock it was.
And then Frank Turner rocks up and those two are having a conversation and Rob's just throwing up in between them. And it was like, this is not one of our finer moments. And then we played an awful... Was it just a really hungover set? I remember Warpaint were watching because our friend Alex from Egyptian Hip Hop, got so many names.
Wow.
Bah, 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 bah. Yeah, he'd stayed with them, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So he'd tell, like, hey, yeah, my friend's band are on. It's like, don't come see us, please. We're literally hanging out of our ass and we're about to play Steadicam. Here it comes. Yeah. It's very
embarrassing. It's like mutually assured destruction there at Leeds Fest. Like, you know, however terrible you feel, the crowd probably feel worse.
Yeah,
because
whatever
backstage amenities you've had access to as an artist playing Leeds Fest, you know, compared to life in the trenches.
But go on.
No, I should just say, we'll talk about the headline is this year.
So
Muse.
Was it Muse?
I don't know.
Muse, Eminem, Arctic Monkeys. No, it was the 1975.
It was the Foo Fighters, wasn't it?
And the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, it was. God, how many times have they done it now?
I know.
They just leave their stuff at my mum's house and see you in five years, Jan.
Their album came out in 2017.
But wasn't there a Dave Grohl hurting himself variable? Is this part of the catching up from him falling off?
Glastonbury.
That was maybe years ago.
Yeah, that was Glastonbury because Florence the Machine ended up headlining.
I know, but people tend to like get round to Leeds later on, so it might be like looking at all the festivals that they cancelled. They're like, oh yeah, we've got to do Glastonbury straight away. Yeah, we'll see Leeds in about 4 years.
Yeah.
Maybe. I was just looking at the lineup myself, and I just think it's one thing that's great is that there's a very long overdue shift from like relegating other genres to like some stage in the far-flung corner of the site and like reflecting, you know, wider mainstream opening up, but just having, you know, not like grime and drill on the Thursday afternoon.
Oh,
like,
squirreled away on the lockup stage.
Yeah, just that stuff like is more, you know, spread between the stages now. Like more kind of accurately reflecting what people are actually listening to, rather than perhaps what festival organizers thought people listened to.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like sort of being a bit more mimicking what the festival was like in the because a lot of people are sharing old posters. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing one from 94 mm-hmm. or whatever it was, and in terms of like, you know, rap and other things of that nature, it was all over it was main stage and second stage as well. It wasn't just as you say, like kind of it was like dance acts as well. It wasn't just like the dance tent for one day mm-hmm. on the Sunday or anything like that. The 1975 it's very just deserved. I think we've talked about this before on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
It's just refreshing to see a band actually from the north of England, like of playing anywhere up there, let alone one that have obviously like captured so many people's imagination.
They've completely smashed it, really.
Haven't they? And you know, because there's definitely been years when you could just play Leeds and Reading bingo and try and guess the three heads. I mean, people endlessly did to be like, it's going to be Muse and the Foo Fighters some other like.
Well, I think added to that, the fact that I think what I've learnt in my crash course weekends of acting college is about standing on top of one's performance and not letting it get over your head. And by the way,
is this the same podcast?
I'm just saying that 1975 seemed to have kind of come along and just gone, this is right. We know what we're doing with this, and especially in the way that they announced the new single for their next album, pretty much at the festival itself. They had like a listening party, didn't they, at the NME stage on the Thursday, which is almost like kind of Kanye-esque, in the way that it's like, right, here's a song, we'll be playing it tomorrow for you, kind of like, because that's how cocksure we are about this performance, like that we're just going to be chucking in new stuff there as well as everything else. And it's like their playground all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. I think it's really impressive. The other thing, and this is an interesting one up for debate, there was a joint headliner on the Saturday, Post Malone and 21 Pilots. What do we make of the whole joint headliner?
Did they collaborate? Was it a collabo?
Did they just do shorter sets?
Well, no.
They're both headlining.
Well, when we were talking before about the Pulp and Strokes, they co-headlined. So basically, one of them headlines the Reading, and then one of them headlines the Leeds.
Yeah.
The Leeds, the Reading. The Leeds. Like, but they take it in turns to headline.
So that means they definitely have the same booking agent. Right, that has two bands that they can't.
Well, because it affects the fee quite a lot.
Or does it
if it's a co-headline?
Yeah, just get like one set.
I don't know
Queen Stone Age as well, didn't they?
That felt really weird that they both could have easily headlined. Yeah. On their own terms.
And it's just like, who's going to back down from whose tour routing first?
Yeah.
It's got to be a very dry reason like that. Like,
well, and also for the outsiders. I mean, I suppose when it comes to the Pulp and Strokes,
the Pulp.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. But I suppose because Pulp headlined Leeds that time, which is probably
I remember
more of
that.
A, like Yorkshire, as close to home as it's getting. But the thing is, like, for people, if there's no sort of connection to it like that, it's always going to be about, well, who gets to headline Reading? Because it's a bigger festival. It's more people there.
Well,
it's a much bigger.
You know, if that means bigger, more people, you know.
So you released a little teaser track, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Mist on Glass.
Yeah, couldn't afford the
there.
To cut it.
Is that because I'm using them all?
There's like a bag of indie fridge poetry that gets sent around every year and you only get to pick a certain number,
The Pulp.
So when's the record coming out?
This is the point where I can't quite remember what I'm supposed to say and what I'm not supposed to say.
Okay.
It's been brewing for a while, and it's something that I've done myself. It sounds silly thing to say about solo record, but it's been very exciting.
So why now? Why now after so long?
Well, I've been on other tours, is the other thing. And I just didn't want to I didn't see any reason to make any kind of compromise about something. You know, when I was deciding even like what am I calling it, and it's Harkin, it's my name, you know, I was kind of like, well, it just has to be my own name at this point. There's like, there's no point having any excuse to hide behind anything, not even what the project is called. So it was just kind of a absolute refusal to compromise on anything. And that's meant, it's meant a number of things. And I've not actually spent that many days recording it. Like, I think I totted it up and it was maybe like 16 days, something like that. But it's been spread out. So I started it with Stella from Warpaint and Jen from Flock of Dimes and Way Out, because rhythm section, and had a few days in Los Angeles with them. And then went to, again, I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying all this already, but here we go. Chips at Chilton fans are exactly the kind of people that I want to be reaching. So this is the best direct advertising I'm going to possibly get for this project. And then to Sheffield, South Yorkshire, to work with Richard Formby, who made a bunch of Wild Beast records. To have access to his formidable synth collection and formidable modular synth knowledge. So had a lovely time there, and then was finishing it up and trying to find guitars in America, because I've been living there as my girlfriend got a job at a venue over there, and was working with this producer called John Agnello, who produced the Waxahachie record that I played on. And he said, you know, well, maybe we finish it up together and I'll mix it. And I was like, that's great, but I don't have that much stuff, because I've just come, you know, the two of us moved over with four suitcases and like the guitars I could carry. And he said, well, the Sonic Youth Studio is not really being used at the moment.
Nice.
And they've got some stuff.
I bet.
So
all the jazz musters.
Just, you know, every pedal and every guitar amp and I could ever hope to use. So that's where I did the guitars, which was
so where was that? Where's that studio?
That's in New Jersey.
Ah, really?
So I went and it was absolutely, you know, spine tingling as any guitar fan, really. Mm. You know, I can't play it cool about that. And I was looking around and still kind of, you know, stressed out on my nut, because it's just me and I've got this number of days and I'm, you know, on neuroticism overdrive finishing this record, and looking around and getting the tour and being like, John, this is truly a dream come true, but because it's not a commercial studio, it's like their place. Yeah. It's like, they don't have a kettle, so can you drive me to Target so we can buy a kettle, because there's no way I can finish this record
that's like when you get given like a nice hotel sometimes instead of a travel lodge on tour, and you get there, it's like they've not got the sachets. It's I have to call someone for a drink? What the hell's going on here?
One of the things about touring in America, not every single hotel room has a kettle in.
Yes.
It's like, your Chucky Lodge has got one in there.
Yeah. I forgot it was called.
Do you remember the Chucky Lodge?
Yeah. Yeah.
Has that story been told? Is that our story to tell?
Which one was it?
That's a Frankie and the Heartstrings story, the Chucky Lodge.
I heard a couple of stories about Chucky Lodge that were pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it's probably not our story.
Do tell.
There's a certain theory about when you're in a hotel. Again, this is not my story to tell. This is young men on tour with each other, you know, showing each other things so that then it wouldn't be awkward if they saw things later on in the evening. Getting it out of the way upon arrival at the travel lodge, getting your chucky out. Which again, this is just therapy and I'm so scarred. Just touring with, half-formed men.
A bit of a hot take, but I think they had a point to that. I kind of feel like, honestly, all the years we've toured, I mean, like, it's always been like, no! Like, always been petrified. It's we probably shouldn't have given a shit after a while. Why do we constantly care that much?
Shout out to Sunderland.
Shout out to Sunderland. Yeah. And Frankie and the Heartstrings.
I know, geniuses of their time.
Yeah.
Oh God! How did we end up here?
We're talking about Sonic Youth.
Like, oh, man, the man got to go to Sonic Youth Studio. Anyway, yeah.
we're talking about Sonic Youth Studio to exposing yourself in a travel lodge to your friends.
Yeah, truly, you
private
can take the girl.
Exposure.
Yeah, truly, you can take the girl out of Leeds. But oh boy. So anyway, yeah, I've made this fancy record, but
in terms of touring it, like. How will that mm-hmm. be implemented during
really,
all your between all your other projects?
That's a really good question. All suggestions welcome.
Are you going to have the same personnel touring that were on the record?
That's plan A currently. Yep. We're at the moment just trying to sort out how to intricately weave some itineraries, which is. Just the most exciting part of being a musician to talk about.
Great,
I mean, there's been some frenetic email chains, let me tell you, about getting into the business. But yeah, I did South by Southwest this year with the Marion and Lena from the band La Luz playing bass and drums, and it was fun. Like, and I came away from it just really wanting it to happen because I'd done it under my own steam. Like I'd booked it myself, going there as somebody without a label, without a booking agent, and really, dusting off the old Filofax and seeing what places I knew and who maybe I knew that I could jump on fairly last minute, because I put this song out and it got like a very pleasing response. So I was like, well, I should probably do South by Southwest next month. work this out. And yeah, they were in, which was amazing. They were up for it. Problem was, I'm currently living in upstate New York. One of them is living in LA. The other one's living in Florida. So
wow. Could be further away.
I know.
It's the middle point.
I know. With British bands, we're like, oh, one of us has moved to London. It's the end. And then Americans are like, yeah. It's like moving. One of us moved to Russia in terms of distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
But amazingly, I played with Marion once in LA, and then I booked a rehearsal room in Austin the day before our first shows. We played all day. They're incredible. They were both playing and singing harmonies, and I'd learned all the songs. And then we did our first show as a band, like on a big outdoor stage at South by Southwest, and it was amazing. Truly so insane. It worked. Like, yeah. It was, I just wanted it to happen. So when I sort of came out the other side of it and people were asking me, how was South by Southwest? I was like, well, it was fun. Yeah. I really had a lot of fun.
Because, for the record, South by Southwest is not supposed to be fun.
It's not really
not
hard
for
work.
Bands. Well, not for bands
really
who probably aren't from America.
Yeah.
Incredibly difficult.
No.
It's incredibly difficult. And it's a lot of hard work. And again, like going without a team, it was just, you know, the three of us. And, the window for, the margin for error is, very slim, and the opportunity for error is constant. Even if you it's just, you leave your cymbals behind at one venue, and then you've broken the chain of events for the whole of the rest of the festival, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it was genuinely life affirming. And I got to, play some showcases for things that felt very, worthwhile rather than just your average
playing,
branded content.
Rather than playing a rushed 15-minute set to a bunch of people having breakfast.
Yeah.
All the breakfast sets.
They still exist. I mean, we played, there were definitely people still having breakfast because, 1 o'clock in Austin is still breakfast time for many people. But there's things like She Shreds now have a presence there and having a stage that they curate. And it just feels like, as everyone's piled on to South by Southwest, it's also, now there's more niches. You can kind of find the ones that you like. You don't have to go play the Doritos stage,
I do like the sound of that.
I don't think it's a stage made out of Doritos.
There was like a big packet of Doritos. That's the kind of apocryphal, like, South by Southwest jumping the shark. Like, now everyone's wanting to, you know, make a point of, you know, our stage is curated, not branded.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember taking my Juno D synth that I'd had since college the way to South by Southwest. Like, it lasted about 8 years. Mm-hmm. The volume control was still stuck on with Blue Tack. I don't know how it survived the flights.
Wow.
And that was the last time I used it because all the keys were starting to go at both ends. So
just
I could
melted.
Only use, like, two octaves in the middle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And nobody cared. I mean, was anyone there? I just remember we drank a load of really strong beer.
Well, I remember we met two Dutch Uncles fans out there. It was a married couple, and we had a lovely time with them.
Are they from
talking.
Boston? There was a couple from Boston that would come to all of our shows.
Really?
I wonder
really?
If they were the, like,
I think they
Northern
might,
super fans.
I think they might be from the South somewhere, or live in the South somewhere. But yeah, I mean, they were having a great time. We were playing, you know, a tiny little venue. And I remember him going up to the bar saying, so it's strange this, isn't it? You know, you guys are here, great music, sunshine, good times, free beer. And the guy behind the counter went like, it's not free beer. It's donation suggested.
Yeah, it was really
okay. It's not free beer, but all this.
I think that gas station wasn't actually in Austin, was it? It was kind of on the outside.
I don't know where it was. Yeah.
It was it was outside the freeway.
That was the Airbnb that I stayed at the whole, like, afterwards, because I booked it also last minute. Looking at the flights, it was $1,000 cheaper for me to stay on in Austin for 3 days on my own and wait for the, like, midweek
festival
flight, because you know, the industry people had booked all the flights. I was looking at it because at first when I looked at it, I was like, oh, this is absolutely unaffordable, it's impossible. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I could just get, like, again, your Airbnb that was probably in Oklahoma or wherever.
Yeah.
and just ride it out, which, you know, physically I did need, because my step count was very high.
Ooh.
By the
Lovely.
End of those days. Ooh. Yeah, way in the green every single day.
Yeah, we had a similar situation by actually not doing the authentic thing of staying in people's houses, just like staying in a hotel outside of the city.
Yeah.
So you're miles away from all the action.
Yeah, and the shuttle buses stopped at about 11 p.m.
Yeah,
nothing happens at South by after 11 p.m.
So
surely,
you got is a
everyone's done
a bunch
in bed.
Of thrift
did
stores,
Uber and
but
Lyft
you got to go.
Exist when
no,
you did. Yeah, because us neither were skylarking, and that was, and we were too young to hire a car in America. So again, we were sort of tethered to the three available taxis and then the shuttle buses. And a woman nearly went for me because it was outside a hotel, and this taxi driver's calling, Casey, and I was like, oh, is it for Katie? Is there a Casey here? And this woman was like, this, you can't just take other people's cabs. And I was like, every time I order, like, a cup of tea and stand over a barista so they make it correctly, it comes out for Casey.
Nope, leave the bag.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah. You're playing your new record live. How are you going to do it in the UK then? Before.
It's a great question.
Because we're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I mean.
I'm just going to put the tabs online and whoever turns up.
Right.
You know. Yeah, well, I just, part of sort of doing this was I wanted to be able to expand or contract to fit any opportunity. And I mean, you know, previously I'd been in like 3-4 piece bands, but I definitely was frustrated about, you know, not being able to play music as much as I wanted to, for many different reasons, some of which fault of no one's, but I just always wanted to be like, if there's a gig, you know, I can fit in a car on my own, I'll drive to it and do it. And that's how it started, really. Like, my friend Mackenzie, who performs as Torres, I met her at Primavera when I was playing with Sleater-Kinney, and we became friends, and then she was doing a European tour and I was still living over here, and she said, well, you know, do you want to support? And I think I had two songs, I think, that maybe I'd sent her, and that was the, you know, well, I said yes, because then I had to write 30 minutes and I had to perform 30 minutes, and because I'd said that if I didn't write a certain amount of music by a certain point, that I had to call my album All Mouth No Trousers, because I was going around being like, oh, I'm secret, not so secretly working on a solo record, and then hadn't actually played a show or like put anything out, so yeah, it's not going to be called All Mouth No Trousers, because I put a single out, all right, past self.
It's not a bad title though, is it?
You can have it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
We'll give you a fair price for it.
Yeah, 10%.
What is your album going to be called?
You know, oh, like, come on.
You know, yes,
yeah, well, there's, you know, I don't know, checks and balances. I'm just excited for just having some extra musical autonomy, because all I want really is to be able to play music as much as I can at any point in my life. So having the avenues to do that, and I'm always gonna write music, so might as well release it, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, as you know, we usually do a theme tune around the chips, but we need, because this is Leeds, we need, like, what song typifies, is like the Leeds song? Do you know what I mean?
You could do,
like,
a Gang of Four song, or you could do, let's think, I'm trying to think of a Mel B solo cut.
All right, let's go for
let's
it.
Let's just go for it.
Chip, 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 chips. Chip, chip,
come
chip.
On, baby.
No, is that not,
and hang on. What would you, were you the, what would you say is the lead song?
Well, we've been doing Kai's cheese, probably.
Yeah, I know, but
chips.
It's fantastic. We are hosts of the Belgrave Music Hall and Canteen, but we have still spent a staggering amount on these chips, haven't we? So,
well, I mean, you spent it.
I spent it, yeah.
And that's because you didn't look at the menu.
I didn't look at the menu, did I?
So, are you trying to complain?
No. Good. So we got one standard fries, and I bought the S&P session fries, a sharing tray with seaweed, peppers, sriracha, mayo and sesame
seeds. Did you take a picture of it before it was demolished?
I did, and I will take a picture after. So, what do you think?
My first impression.
Chippy, chippy, chippy. Get into the lead spirit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that just raise your spirits, that, doesn't
it? In short, I was very much getting Chinese takeaway.
Yeah.
But that's probably because of all the things that's on it, specifically.
Well, I think that's what it
is.
Is that not what it's advertised as? Is the S&P, does that mean salt and pepper chips?
Oh.
Could be. That's very clever of you.
Thank you very much.
Very clever.
Are they triple cooked?
Yeah, I would say so.
They definitely have a good tan on them.
For a vegetarian loaded fry, I thought it was excellent, actually. I thought everything survived quite well, even the sort of the fellas in the middle, you know.
Yeah. Fellas in the middle.
And there wasn't, like, a sort of, again, as a dairy-free person, there wasn't too much of a gloop of cheese that
exactly.
I needed to avoid. Yeah. That's what I was worried
about. I think maybe we've discovered that the cheesy fries are just generally overrated anyway. Because I think they probably are.
I mean, they
do destroy the host that is the chip.
I thought you meant the person that eats.
Well, that's right.
but we are from the land of Putain bars. Putain.
If you had to choose between chips and gravy or chips and cheese, what are you choosing?
Chips and gravy.
Gravy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I say curry sauce?
Yes.
Yeah. My fish and chip shop order is mushy peas and curry sauce.
Ooh.
Well, with fish and chips.
on either side of your plastic boat.
Yeah, never the and some ketchup and some mayonnaise.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's very colourful.
Do you treat the peas as more of a dipping, like a sort of gravy, or is it like a part of the meal?
I kind of just go for a little refresh.
Yeah.
I just go and have a little pea refreshment and then back to my greasy din, you know.
Living out in the States do you miss that chippy chip?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been to the fish and chip shop, name redacted, near my mum and dad's house, that no one will ever know about because it's so great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not passing that information on publicly. Yeah. It's too great. I've been back for less than a week and I've already been, so
yeah,
that's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Classic. Which, yeah, the, you know, classic chip shop when we'd go with my granddad, he'd still get, like, the spam fritters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there any kind of, like, British places.
I know what you mean. Like, there's plenty of places that like claim they do fish and chips, but it's not even worth bothering. And then, like, weirdly, in New York City, there's like fairly fancy places that claim to be doing like British pub food.
Yeah,
you know, your spotted pigs and the like that are more like a, you know, weirdly. That should be in the business.
They should be in the Algarve or somewhere like that. Sort
it's
of
just
place,
not.
Yeah.
It might be based on British cuisine, but not the part of Britain that I occupy when I'm here. You know, not my strata. But yeah, so generally, no, I don't even bother. I like a deep fried clam, which is something that you don't get here. It's like a chewy, salty thing.
It sounds like it could be something on a chip shop menu that no one's ordered for 20 years.
Yeah, they're nice. Yeah. Deep fried clam I can recommend. Mm. But
I got recommended a couple in New York to go to, but the caveat to that was they're not good. Like, they're good for New York, but good for America, but they're not.
And also sort of the place culturally that, you know, maybe there's a good curry house, but it's going to be like a sort of high-end one, much like in the UK, that's the sort of position that Mexican food occupies. Like, the quote-unquote good Mexican food here is all, like, quite expensive.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, yeah, in terms of the thing that you can buy that's probably good, that's going to make you full, that's probably a fiver or less, where, you know, in the UK it might be Turkish food or curries. Like, definitely in the US it's like having access to amazing, really cheap Mexican and Latin American food, and yeah, other food that's not just Mexican food.
Are there any particular delicacies or just kind of bits of, like, you know, the American diet that you've really taken to since living out there?
Well, I can't really eat them anymore because I can't really eat dairy anymore, sadly. Sadly, to chips and cheese fans.
Yeah.
Pupusas are very nice, which is a bit like a sort of, it's like a Latin American pasty. They might be El Salvadorian, I can't remember. But they're rather tasty. And then, you know, all of the bougie drinks that obviously I'm going to like. I like all of your lavender lemonades and your iced chai matcha lattes and, you know, of our time soaking all of those up, you know.
Back to these chips.
Yep. Any other comments on these chips?
I think the underlying fry is very solid. Like, I like the kind of double, triple cooked whatever situation we've got going on. So we've got the basic fry, and then we've got the example of the session fry, which we all, you know, when it's basically a whole tray that one might get served you know, school dinner on. Your hospital tray, but absolutely covered with chips, like a mountain the size of like three hedgehogs.
Yes,
kind of.
I'd say but maybe more,
that kind of size.
Three medium sized
hedgehogs,
well fed hedgehogs.
And we all kind of, you know, mocked it as it was placed upon us. But after our session today, it's...
We've had a good go at it.
We really have.
You feeling okay after it? You ate a bit fast.
Well, no,
I just
hunger burst. Half hour in and I just, keep talking, guys.
But I think when it was coming over, I got a little pang of excitement just to see a massive tray of food being presented to me. I mean, I think maybe that might just be me, but
like
any
a pig
large
in the pen.
Yes.
Yes. Your little tail.
Exactly. Yeah, running around in circles.
Yeah.
But I think any large amount of food on one receptacle will always give me a little pang of excitement.
Well, is it worth marking it?
Should we?
I think we should. Just for the imaginary league table that doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. No.
Okay. Well, this is always my job to get my calculator out. Yeah.
Out of 10, we do.
We go pitchfork style.
I'm going to go last because I need to know. Okay. Like, you know. Yeah. Set the scene.
So I'll go first, and we'll go around.
Yeah. Go on. Clockwise.
So I shall go 7.
7.
Points.
Points.
2.
2. Surprisingly low for you, Neil. I thought. Duncan.
I'm going to say 6.8, because for me they are a good 7 chip, but there were times where some of the chips were overly tanned.
Okay.
Only in some instances. So I'm just kind of 6.8.
I'm going 7.6.
So that leaves you, that's Katie.
Very wow. high, especially
yeah,
for
I
you.
Yeah, I loved it. It's great.
Well, I'm going to do 7.7 because I have to have the highest score as the person from as the person from Leeds here because, you know, all systems are inherently flawed. That's the thing we really need to take away from this, is that every election is rigged. So
I mean, this is what this has been all about.
Yeah, anyway. If I'd really gone for it, I would have just gone for a 10 because of Leeds, but also I also can't be one of those people. So 7.7, please.
Perfect. So the average is 7.3, which is very respectable.
I think that's the highest score.
Really?
By 0.2.
Beautiful.
Well, I'm happy
with
that.
The popular vote, if you will.
There you go.
And that's it for episode 22 of Chips of Chorlton. Big thanks to Andy and Duncan from Dutch Uncles for getting in my air-conditionless car on a very hot day and travelling over to Leeds. Big thanks to the Belgrave for putting us up. And a huge thanks to Katie Harkin. Make sure you keep an eye out for her new tunes that should be coming next year sometimes. And of course, keep an eye out for when she is touring with Slater Kinney. That's it. We will be back soon. We have another podcast organised with Faith from Pins. We're going to record that at Yes in the centre of Manchester next Wednesday, September 11th. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Please like, subscribe on your podcast provider, and thank you very much. We'll see you soon.